It's a great pleasure to be with you all today. It's a great honor to be asked to speak to all of you. Gauranga Prabhu informed me that I was speaking yesterday morning, and he told me my subject was Lord Nityananda, because very soon the Nityananda Triodicy is coming up. And I'll be honest, there'll be speakers so much more qualified to speak on the Lord's Leela, I think, than myself. You'll probably have Radha Swami here and all of the brahmacharis here, and so many of the devotees here could speak on that well. I don't think I'll speak on so much, maybe a little bit, on Lord Nityananda's Leelas. But what I'd rather speak on is more understanding the importance of Lord Nityananda in our own lives, in our own devotional service. But before I begin to speak, I'd just like to share a few words. How grateful I am for your community here, for this temple. I don't know how aware all of you are, but for many places around the world, this Radha Gopinath Mandir and its congregation and the seva that is done here serves as an inspiration for all that we do. Like, for instance, I serve in New York at the Bhakti Center, and there we always look to this place here for inspiration and for guidance and for an example. So I don't know how you all feel. Sometimes the humility of the Vaishnava thinks I'm doing very little, but what you all do together really reverberates, you understand? Spreads, the vibration spreads all around the globe. And so I'm very grateful to be here amongst you all. And for many years, maybe over about 20 years, I've been coming here regularly. And it's been one of the most important parts of my devotional life. So I thank you all. I thought I also couldn't begin without sharing just a few words of in memory of Srinathji Prabhu. For so many years, I've come here and had the benefit of his association. He was such a shining example of devotional service for so many. I remember as a young man, I was about 20 years old, my first exposure to him was seeing the film Your Ever Well Wisher. Have you all seen that before? Yeah? And he has a small part in that where he's being interviewed, and he's describing that how, as like a business person, he was used that background to kind of analyze Srila Prabhupada when he first met him, and he was looking for some kind of weakness, for some kind of greed, some kind of anger in him. And no matter how much he tried, he couldn't find anything like that in Srila Prabhupada's character. And somehow that little short little clip of him speaking like that meant a lot to me. I don't know exactly why that struck me in the way it did, but I felt it had a lot to get me started on my faith in Srila Prabhupada, my practice of devotional service. So I'll miss seeing him. I'm sure you already miss him very much here. But his memory is very dear to me. I'm sure it's dear to all of us, and I thank him. And I would say I pray for him, but really I hope he prays for me and all of us. It was a great fortune to have his association. So the subject is Lord Nityananda. And I said that I wanted to speak about who he is and how the role that he plays in the life of a follower. Right? Srila Prabhupada said that Lord Nityananda is the principle of Guru. He's like the personification of the principle of Guru Tattva. And it's said that there are certain tattvas, there are certain truths, categories of truths that are difficult to understand, like Lord Shiva, very difficult to understand. You can analyze this, and something that's a bit mysterious. Certainly there's fundamental aspects of who he is that are easy enough to understand, but to really truly understand who he is, it's almost like he is Lord Vishnu, but he's not Lord Vishnu, and we can use examples like yogurt and milk, and but it's still will be difficult to fully grasp and understand who he is. And Guru Tattva is like that as well. we all take shelter. The spiritual aspirant takes shelter of the guru in the form of a person. But we also understand that guru manifests in other forms, correct? Yes? How else does guru manifest? Can anyone suggest? Anyone know? Sometimes it's said that the guru manifests externally as the guru, as the person, the guru, and internally? Yeah, Chaitya Guru or the Paramatma. So guru is in the heart speaking to us. Most of us have difficulty hearing that guru. So guru also manifests externally as a person. Right? Sometimes guru manifests even in other ways, right? In the animal kingdom or in forms of nature. The truth that the guru carries can manifest, and that's spoken about in the Bhagavatam, right? That one can see, one can feel the presence or receive instruction through even inanimate objects, what to speak of animals and other types of people. And there's a type of guru called the Vartma Pradarshaka Guru. You've all heard of this before? You're familiar? Vartma Pradarshaka, meaning that it's the guru that shows the way, right? Shows the path. Now, this person that shows one the path, they may be like a strict Vaishnava, like a learned person that embodies the behavior and the culture of our sampradaya, of our lineage. They carry that in their words and in their behavior, but they may not be. They may be have a totally different type of behavior, but still somehow that person became a conduit. You know the word conduit? They conducted it. Like a wire conducts energy, they became the conduit for the same principle of guru. And a famous example, can anyone think of the example I'm thinking of? There's one very famous example of this. Huh? Excuse me? Chintamani, yes. Chintamani, who was the guru of Bilva Mangala Thakura. You've all heard the prayers of Bilva Mangala Thakura? So beautiful, right? You all know this Govinda Damo Dara Madhaveti. Have you heard this? It's so nice. Beautiful song, beautiful prayer, many verses glorifying Lord Krishna in a personal, intimate way. Very moving to the heart. Bilva Mangala, he was able to write and capture that love for Krishna, that most precious state of consciousness. He was able to speak it and put it into words so that we can all benefit from it. But he recognizes as his guru, not his only guru, but his Vartma Pradarshaka guru, was one prostitute named Chintamani. Right? And the story goes that he was very attached to seeing her regularly, and he lived on one side of the river and she lived on the other side. And one night, it was really stormy. It was like not just like raining hard. You people know hard rain here in Mumbai, right? I've seen hard rain in America, but when I was here once during the monsoon, and I said, my goodness, this is like the heaviest rain in New York, but then you multiply it by about three times, and then it goes on for months at a time, nonstop. I was amazed. It was beautiful. But it was at some night like this that it wasn't beautiful for him. At nighttime, he's trying to get across the river to see Chintamani. He can't control himself. He's so lusty. And so he's swimming across the river in the middle of the night in a storm. And even as he's swimming across the river, it's like all kind of horrible kind of challenges come up. He reaches for a log to try to hang on and he realizes it's a dead body, and he's ghastly things are happening, and he's swimming. Finally makes it across the river, and he makes it to the home of Chintamani. And when Chintamani sees him, she's kind of shocked that he's there. Like, on a night like tonight, you came across the river just to see me? And then she said something that changed his life forever. She said, if you had the same kind of determination that you have to come see me, if you had that same determination to become Krishna's devotee, then very quickly you become a pure devotee. And this was her observation. She wasn't, I assume, you know, that the profession kind of indicates that she wasn't living the lifestyle that we would expect of a guru, right? The kind of sense control and the kind of behavior that we would see. But somehow still, she became a conduit for the principle of guru to come. For the words that she spoke that were spoken through her. She probably had no idea that she was doing it as she probably said it, I assume. You know, she said it just as like just a comment. It just occurred to her. But what it meant to him, the way that he received it, was as a very powerful instruction to change his life at that moment. Right? Just as like Srila Prabhupada was instructed by his guru, right? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. First time he saw him, he's on the roof of the building in Calcutta, and to hear him speak, he offers his obeisances as he knows he should do to his sadhu. And even before he's getting up, he's receiving his first order. Right? You're an intelligent young man. Why not preach the glories of Sri Chaitanya, you know, to the English-speaking language in the Western world? And then Srila Prabhupada took that order. Right. It took him many, many years till he could actually carry it out. But he held that order in his heart for such a very long time. Now, of course, he was someone that embodied all that we would expect of a guru in his learning, in his behavior, the depth of his realization, in his compassionate heart, his ability to discriminate, and so on. Chintamani, we don't see that at all, probably. And I know that in my own life, the people that showed me the path were very unusual people that you would not expect to be considered guru. But to this day, the people that were originally kind of introduced me to Srila Prabhupada's movement into bhakti yoga, they're a little kind of rough characters. And they are to this day. I still stay in touch with a few of them. Although I don't associate very closely with them, I still try to honor them. I honor them in my heart, and I stay in touch with them and see if there's any service I can do for them. So I still try to respect that they became guru, that principle of guru worked through them. So Lord Nityananda, it is said, that he is the personification of that principle. And so then that becomes very important to us. Right? What does the guru do? You know, what does the guru do for the disciple, for the follower? We have to think about where we all are at in our life. Right? It's said that the guru can deliver the disciple. Deliver us from what? If we analyze it, we see that we're all, on one level or another, in a difficult predicament. Right? You're all familiar with the word predicament? No? Huh? No, predicament. Yeah, difficult situation. We're stuck in a little trap, in a sense. The soul, right? The spirit soul. Just a spark of spiritual energy with its own identity, right? And that identity is wonderful. And when we hear the description of that spark of spiritual energy, it's said that it's Sat Chit Ananda, right? That it's eternal, and it's Chit. It understands everything correctly. It's not an illusion. It perceives things as they are. It understands truth. And then Ananda, blissful. Okay, that by nature, we're very happy. But we don't always experience that. As a matter of fact, it may be like we're almost never really experiencing that. And that little spark of spiritual energy is trapped within a body. And it's also moving around with a mind. And that mind especially becomes the trap, right? That mind is like a computer. And our eyes and our ears and all our senses are taking in information that's being downloaded onto the computer of our mind, and then it's being programmed through what comes through our senses. Right? You all own computers, I assume, and you're familiar with the idea of computers being hacked. Yeah, they use this word hack here. Is there a Marathi word for hack? Or they just say hacked? Okay. So someone else may put information on your computer and change what's there on your computer. Change the information. So imagine, you don't have to, it is happening to us that what's come through our eyes and through our ears is like our computer's being hacked. It's being programmed with information that says, this is good and this is bad. This is pleasant and this is painful. But that information is random. It could easily have been programmed the other way. Right? Like you can have a computer and you can attach a camera to it and you could flash, you could program that computer so that if you flash a blue light in front of the camera, it says, I like blue. Correct? It could even say it like verbally, right? There could be a recording that says, I like blue when you flash the blue light. And then you could also program it to say that when you flash a red light in front of the camera, that the computer says, I don't like red. Correct? But you could just as easily program it the other way. You could make it say that, I don't even remember what I said, but I don't like blue and I do like red. It's random programming. Our minds have been programmed by our experience in that way. Right? I'll give you a hint. Or I'll give you an example. I come to India. I've been to India about 30 times over the past 30 years. And I must admit, I find your cuisine very pleasant. As I'm Italian, generally we like Italian food a lot, but I would think I would have to say that the Indian food is better. The varieties that you come up with are amazing, and the things you can do with certain ingredients are really creative and delicious and wonderful. But I have one problem, that the food tends to be a little hot for me. Right, that for me, chili is a dangerous thing. Right, like if you take just a little tiny bit and put it in there, then I can like it. You know, I can like that it has a little heat to it and it helps make it a little digestible. And even the flavor, if it's just a little bit, I can appreciate it. But for many of you, I found that like just a tiny bit of that chili is enough not only to maybe say, I don't like this, but it's enough for me to say, I need help right now. This is very painful, it's burning, and I need some relief. Someone please bring me something to give me relief. I'm in a state of distress at this moment. And that's even if it's just a tiny bit too much. Whereas many of you could take that same chili pepper and just start eating it, like biting on it and eating it. Correct? So somehow my computer of my mind has been registered that when I bite it says this is too much. Whereas your computer of your minds are saying this is okay. This is quite all right. And how did that happen? You know, I assume it's because as you were all growing up, you were watching your parents or your siblings or friends of the family and they were eating this chili and they were smiling and they were happy and a message was sent to the computer of the mind. Correct? This is good. This is not painful, right? This is, everything's okay. And so in this way, this isn't perhaps the most consequential hacking of the mind. But in so many of the information that's there, it becomes very consequential. What we find to be pleasant, what we find to be unpleasant. And therefore, Krishna says that according to how the mind has been programmed, it can become your best friend or become your worst enemy. Right. If somehow that mind becomes programmed to appreciate, for instance, like the beauty of the temple, right? The beauty of Radha and Krishna, right? If it begins to like, say, the smells of the flowers in here and the incense, and it develops a taste for this, and then it begins to crave this, well, now your mind's become your best friend. But there's so many other things in the world that the mind becomes programmed to be attracted to. And so many of those are dangerous. So many of those draw us away from Krishna. They make us forgetful of Krishna. And if we want to indulge in them and really enjoy them, then we have to become forgetful of Krishna. And so then Krishna's energy, this maya of his, this makes us forget so that we can dive into that. And we may find some thrill through that. We may find some temporary pleasure for that, but the soul will never find this, yayatma supersiddhiti, this full satisfaction of the soul will never be found. And so then we move through this world, trying to find those things that bring us temporary pleasure, trying to avoid those things that bring some kind of displeasure. And all along, connected to that becomes a conception of who I am, a false conception of who I am. We develop an identity, and we hold on to that identity, and we pursue our life according to that identity. Then eventually we give up the body, and then we take up a whole new identity. Right? And this concept of who I am, that we've fully bought into, that we fully accepted as being true, really has absolutely nothing to do with who we are underneath it all. Right? What are we really underneath it all? Sri Chaitanya said, to help answer this question, I'm not a Brahmana, right? I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Shudra, I'm not a Brahmachari, I'm not a Grihastha, right? Not a Vanaprastha, not a Sannyasi. What am I? Gopi, Bharata, Kamala, Yora, Dasa, Dasa, Anudasa. Right? So he's saying all the different kind of senses of identity that are out there. Even I may be externally playing the role of one of them, that's not who I really am. Right? I'm just the servant of Krishna, who's the lover of the gopis. I'm the servant of Krishna, who's the lover of the gopis. Right? Have you all heard this term, Bhuta Shuddhi, before? In puja, the priests will do this before they say, go onto the altar, perform the puja, Bhuta Shuddhi. It's a small ritual. Sometimes it's done elaborately. Sometimes it's done very briefly, that one wants to give up before they go and they serve the Lord directly. You want to give up, just drop off your false sense of identity of who I am. You want it almost like I'm stepping into the spiritual world and my true spiritual identity. Right? So then in our Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he suggested that this could be used as the Bhuta Shuddhi, this prayer. I'm not a Brahmana, I'm not a Vaishya, etc. I'm simply Gopi Bharata Kamala Yora Dasa Dasa Anudasa. I'm just a servant of Krishna, of Radha and Krishna, of Krishna and the Gopis. Right? If that's our real identity, if that's who we really are underneath it all, right? How many lives have we lived and we've embraced different identities? We have men on this side of the room, right? And we're all thinking, I'm a man. We have ladies on this side of the room. They're all thinking, I'm a lady. Right? And then so many more senses of identity that come with that we've just been exchanging, you know, through the course of many, many lifetimes, you know. It may have been that, like, in the previous life, the men were all sitting over there and the women were all sitting over here. And then they switch, you know. And then we fight over so many things, you know. Based on that false sense of identity, and maybe we end up on the other side of the fight in our next life. We don't know. But what the guru can deliver, what the principle of guru that's carried through different people, it can deliver us back to that true identity. Gopi Bharata Kamala Yora Dasa Dasa Anudasa, that I'm the servant of Radha and Krishna and the gopis. Right? So if we want to find out about Lord Nityananda, we can look. Of course, there's important places to go. We can look at the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, where there's so much written there. Even right at the beginning of this book, if we go to the first chapter of the Adi Lila, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he takes pains, he goes into detail to explain exactly who Lord Nityananda is. Right? He wants us to understand who this person is, that he's... And he can be difficult to understand because his behavior, while always very beautiful and always very merciful, is sometimes very unusual. Have you all read about all Lord Nityananda's pastimes? He's called Avadhut because sometimes he doesn't have his clothes on. Sometimes he's running and he's saying all kind of unusual things. So Krishnadas Kaviraj wants us to understand that this Lord Nityananda is not an ordinary person, and he's not a crazy person. He is Lord Balaram, Krishna's brother. And he is the original servant of Krishna. Krishna expands into Lord Balaram, and then Lord Balaram expands further to what's called the Chaturvyuha, these four forms of Lord Vishnu. And then from there, they expanded to further forms of Lord Vishnu into the material world. Right? So Krishna doesn't have to do this. Balaram steps up and says, let me be your first servant. Let me take care of what needs to be taken care of for you. And he becomes Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Karnadakshaya Vishnu, and Kshiradakshaya Vishnu, right, which enters the heart of every living being and is there with us as Chaitya Guru, as the Guru, the internal Guru. So in so many ways, Balaram serves Krishna, becomes the first expansion, the first servitor. And similarly, he manifests in this world, in Chaitanya Leela, as Lord Nityananda. And as Lord Nityananda, he becomes the original servant of Mahaprabhu. Right? And we can tell some stories about how he does that. But first, let's understand that beyond Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's Chaitanya Bhagavat, and then there's also the source for our understanding of Nityananda becomes the songs of the great Acharyas, songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the songs of Narottam Das Thakur. And Narottam Das Thakur, who is an intimate servant of Radha and Krishna, and through all of his songs he expresses the depth of his devotion for Radha and Krishna. So he says, Heno Nitai Prabhubai, the Radha Krishna Paite Nai, that if you want to attain the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna, there's only one way. You must grab hold of the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda. Otherwise, you'll never achieve the service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Right? So Lord Nityananda, somehow, he becomes the conduit for our... As Gaudiya Vaishnavas, as Krishna Bhaktas, the seva of Radha and Krishna, that is the very goal of our life. Right? That is what we're focused on. That is what is the meaning of our sadhana, and the meaning of our seva is to somehow purify ourselves so that computer of the mind becomes reprogrammed very intentionally, right? Through prayer, through shravanam, through kirtanam, through seva, through ritual, through puja, through all these different practices that we take in through our senses, the type of information that revives the understanding that I'm not this body. I am the servant of Radha and Krishna. So Lord Nityananda is somehow delivering that to us. He's delivering it through, he's showing the path himself, but he's also going out and doing it himself. Right? And this is, you find such beautiful examples. It's there in the songs, it's there in the Shastra, that, you know, Mahaprabhu is considered to be the merciful incarnation of Krishna. Right? Same person. Krishna and Chaitanya are the same person, but it's the same person expressing a different mood. In the form of Lord Krishna, in the threefold bending form, Tribhanga, the mood that he's manifesting is madhurya, sweetness. Right? And his pastimes are very, very sweet. And when he comes in the form of Sri Chaitanya, then his mood is called audarya. And so audarya means it's merciful. His mood is to be compassionate. He wants to deliver everyone. He can recognize that people are suffering and I just want them to be delivered. So that's just flowing from his heart. So he's known as that merciful incarnation of Krishna. But it's said that Nityananda is still more merciful. So therefore he's the most merciful. Right? That Sri Chaitanya, if we look at his Leela, he's especially known for delivering very important people. Right? Like the class of society. When he leaves home. I mean, first of all, there's like, even when he's a young man, like there's Keshava Kashmiri. Right? Keshava Kashmiri was this pundit that was so powerful, so famous, that he was traveling all over India, and it didn't matter who came against him, no one could defeat him. His learning was like so strong. And one day he wanders into Navadvip, which was like the real place of learning in Bengal, and famous all over India. And Sri Chaitanya is just a young man, and he has his students there. And in an amazing way, Sri Chaitanya defeats him. So much so that he couldn't understand, how did this happen? How did this young man defeat? He did it in such a beautiful way, and where Keshava Kashmiri was glorifying the Sri Chaitanya said to him, "Could you please? We're sitting here at the bank of the Ganga. Could you please share with us some?" some beautiful verses about the Ganga. And instantly, on the spot, it's saying flowing like a river himself. He's just pumping out all of these incredibly beautiful verses. They're beautiful poetically, but they're also like they're full of wisdom and full of truth. Who can compose verses like that? Hard enough to compose one good verse that carries truth and is beautiful. But to just, on the spot, compose like 100 of them, it's amazing. And then hearing the Sri Chaitanya said, those are very beautiful verses, thank you so much. But you know, the 47th verse, I don't know which number it was, but he just picked one of them. He said there's some very nice ornaments, poetic ornaments in that verse, and there are also some faults. Would you care to tell us about the ornaments and the faults? Right? And Keshava Kashmir is saying, faults. There are no faults in what I composed. All those verses were perfect. And then Sri Chaitanya very carefully points out, you know, precisely exactly how those faults were there. Nobody else would have found these faults. Nobody else could have recognized these faults. Anybody else would have just been overwhelmed by the incredible output of verse that had just come out of him. But Sri Chaitanya was right. He quoted the verses himself, and Keshava Kashmir was like, how did you, he said, I just spoke those all like the wind. How did you even remember them? And he said, well, some people can compose verses very nicely and some people can remember whatever they hear. And I'm like that, I can remember whatever I hear. And then when he explained the faults, it actually shocked Keshava Kashmir, this most learned man. This young man just defeated him. He went home and he prayed that night. He prayed to the goddess Saraswati. How did this happen to me? You've always been there for me. You've always blessed me. And now I feel like I've lost your blessings. And goddess Saraswati explains, no. You can really get the blessings from this Nimai Pandit. And so that's one big name, big famous person delivered by Sri Chaitanya. But then he does more when he takes sannyas and then he goes to Puri. First person to see him there, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Right? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is just another incredibly brilliant scholar, an incredibly brilliant philosopher, even so much that he's recognized all over India for his learning, and he's the guru of the king. Right? And a similar thing happens through explaining one verse, right, the Atmarama verse from the Bhagavatam, that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is not only defeated, but in a sense he's converted from impersonalism to personalism. Right? And then there's King Pataparuja himself, the king of Orissa, right, and there are others as well, Prakashananda Saraswati. And all his disciples in Benares, right? He delivers all of them. So Sri Chaitanya is known for delivering these big named people, these very famous, important people. But he asked Nityananda to go to the common people, to go to the masses. He says, no one, I can trust no one but you to deliver everyone like this. You please go. And how does he ask him to do it? He says, please go door to door, right? Door to door, just knock on every door. And when you knock on their door, then you tell them, when they open the door, you tell them, please accept Krishna. Krishna is your mother. Krishna is your father. Krishna is your very life. Please just take this name and have some faith in it and chant it. And it will deliver everything to you. So that's what he did. That was his life. You know, he and Haridas Thakur did this. They would knock on every door. Have any of you ever done this before? Just knocked on someone's door and asked them to take to Krishna consciousness? I used to do this. I used to go from door to door, just knock on someone's door. And they would open the door, and there I was. And I wouldn't exactly tell them, Krishna's your mother, Krishna's your father. But I would ask them to take a look at this book, which basically tells them that, you know. It was an amazing experience. You know, you really would feel that, you're connected to Krishna when you're doing this. You feel like you're putting your life in the hands of Krishna, in the hands of Guru and Krishna, that I'm going to knock on the door. I don't know if this person is going to... Sometimes people would be very upset with you. They would say angry things, insulting things to you, and slam the door in your face. And here in India, they're pretty good with unexpected guests when they arrive in the home. Like there's a culture to welcome them. In the United States, it's very different. That culture doesn't exist so much. Maybe amongst some people like that are more refined, they might feel the need to be polite, but not necessarily. And many people will feel almost like insulted that you even came, knocked on the door, a stranger like this. So people could be very rude and insulted. Sometimes people would treat you like, almost like you were Narada Muni that just came down, you know, to deliver some wisdom to them, and they would just like honor you. You know, you never know what would happen when you knock on the door. And in the course of one day, I might knock on 100 doors and have 100 different kind of experiences. But in doing so, I felt that I was following the example of Nityananda, right? Who's the guru, right? And the guru, again, sets the example. He sets it as Balaram from the beginning. I want to serve. Right? He sets it as Nityananda that Sri Chaitanya says, please go door to door. I'm counting on you to deliver these people. And he goes door to door. And perhaps the most famous lila of Lord Nityananda is when he's doing exactly that kind of service. And who's his partner? Can anyone say? Haridas Thakur. Right? What a team. Right? Lord Nityananda, who's Lord Balaram himself, who's just completely saturated with like ecstatic emotions in love of Sri Chaitanya and of Radha and Krishna. And Haridas Thakur. Right? Now the depth of their realization about Radha and Krishna's lila we can't even fathom. Right? And that what they're delivering, you see, why is he the most merciful? We say he's the most merciful because they're taking the very highest thing, right? The lotus feet of Radha and Krishna, and they're delivering to the very lowest people. They're giving it out to people that are apparently unqualified to receive it. Right? So, you know, if we just look briefly at the work of Srila Vyasadeva, it's like his work is building and building and building and building up to this point, right? He writes the Vedas. And the Vedas are there to really mostly there's mention of the Supreme Lord in there, and there's mention of devotion there, but really what they're teaching, mostly what they're emphasizing, is this karma kanda, this activities, rituals, and so on, piety, with the goal, not the goal to just have selfless love for Radha and Krishna, but the goal is, I want to enjoy this material world as much as I can. So if I can do that in connection with the gods, and if I can satisfy them through my acts of sacrifice, and if through piety I can build up a stock of good karma, then I'll be able to enjoy this world even better. Right? So it can be a helpful step forward for someone, but it's not the highest thing, it's not even close. Right? And then the Upanishads are written, and the Upanishads take it a step further. That why be so concerned with just what's going on in this sense enjoyment and illusion in this material world? You are a spirit soul, right? You are Brahman. Transcend this world and become free from the suffering of this world like that. All the cycle of birth and death and all the pains that follow the pleasure of this material world. You don't have to be subject to that. You can transcend it. You can go beyond. So the Upanishads teach this jnana, right? Become free. Escape the suffering of this world. That's a step higher still, but it's still not the highest thing. And then Srila Vyasadeva gives us the Mahabharata. And the Mahabharata, within there's the Gita. And through the Mahabharata, we're meeting so many of the yogis and learning more about their lives and hearing about devotion. And then when Arjuna is on that battlefield and he's in that state of anxiety and distress, then in a very comprehensive but concise way, Krishna gives a very much broader and clear presentation of how far yoga can take one. That really where it's meant to go is that one's mind is always deeply absorbed in affectionate thought of Lord Krishna. Okay. So we've come a long way now. And then Vyasadeva goes and he writes 17 Puranas beyond that. But even after he's done all of this, he's feeling incomplete. He's feeling unsatisfied. He doesn't exactly know why. And his guru Narada comes and he tells him that you haven't given the highest thing yet. You haven't taken people the whole way. In the Gita, it's pointed at, but you haven't fully spelled it out, given them Krishna's Leela, shown them the very pinnacle of spiritual existence. What's our highest aspiration, our very highest goal? You haven't showed that. Completely separate from any selfishness, completely separate from any ideas of enjoying the material world, even separate from any ideas of escaping the sufferings of this world through jnana. Higher still is pure devotion without any personal motivation. And only that can completely satisfy the soul. So then Vyasadeva writes the Bhagavatam. And he begins the Bhagavatam with Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, that I offer my respects to Lord Krishna. Right, he begins right there. And it's said that the first two cantos of the Bhagavatam are like the lotus feet of the Lord. And then as we go up the cantos, there's the legs and there's the body. And then the tenth canto, right, the very largest one, is said as like the face, the beautiful face of Lord Krishna. It tells his all his lila while he was here on earth. And then within that face, it says that the five chapters that describe the Krishna's rasa lila with the gopis, that's like the beautiful smile on the face of Krishna. And within those chapters, that highest aspiration is revealed, right? That Krishna plays his flute and calls the gopis out of their homes into the forest at nighttime under the full moon. And under that full moon, when they arrive, Krishna says, what are you doing here? Why did you come? You know, you should go back to your homes. You all have your dharma to perform. You all have your duties to perform. It's not right for you to come here. And when he says that as a motive, as a stimulus for the gopis to open up and really reveal their hearts. And then the gopis, the prayers of the gopis to Krishna there under that full moon night, they express to Krishna that we don't want anything but you. This is the highest thing. Now the highest thing, Vyasadeva is finally revealing the very highest thing. We don't want anything else in this world. We don't want to go back to our homes. We don't find pleasure in anything but your service. We've given up everything for you, and we're simply here asking for you to please accept our love, accept our service. And if you won't accept it, then we will just sit right here and burn in the fire of separation, because that's all we want, and we can't imagine anything else. So we beg you, please accept us. That's the highest revelation. That's what all the Vedic literature was working up to. And Krishna is so moved by this that he says, I wish I could repay you, but I have nothing. The love that you possess in your heart is the very highest thing. There's nothing that I can give you that can compete with that. So all I can do is ask you to please be satisfied with that love itself. So that love is what Lord Nityananda is distributing. That message that Vyasadeva held back for so long, right, and only then finally revealed it, Lord Nityananda is taking that, going door to door and trying to give you that. And he's not worried that you're qualified either. He's saying, I want you to have the very highest thing. I'm gonna roll on the ground right here and beg you to please accept it. I don't care if you treat me well. I don't care if you treat me, if you insult me. I don't care even if you physically attack me. I want you to take this. Right? And so we see that played out. Right? And perhaps the most famous lila of Lord Nityananda, when he with Haridas Thakur, they see, they're going through the streets of Navadvip and they see Jagai and Madai. Right? And just from a distance, you can see these two are bad news. And as we say this in America, they're bad news. You have a saying like that here? No? What do you say when you see people like that? You can't say? You don't want to say. Okay. Anyway, we say something like that. They're bad news. When they first came upon them, do you know what Jagai and Madai were doing? They're fighting with each other. They're rolling on the ground, pounding on each other. They're just so insane. They're intoxicated. They were just wild, very violent. They took pleasure in lighting people's houses on fire and just sitting there watching to see if they would be able to escape or not. That's how cruel they were. Their hearts were just like so. We talked about the mind of the computer. You know, it can be programmed to say this is pleasant and this is painful, right? Somehow their minds were so contaminated that they could actually find that pleasurable. I'd like to light this house on fire and sit here and watch, see if people make it out. So evil. And that's just the beginning of the list of all their horrible activity. And so Nityananda could have said, oh, well, these people, forget it, right? Deliver the love of Radha and Krishna to these people, then they'll never be able to understand it, what to appreciate it, you know. They're not qualified for it. I'm just going somewhere else. Let me find someone who's qualified to receive this. But that's not what he thought at all. What he thought was, these two people look like the most fallen people I've ever seen. Well, if they can accept Radha and Krishna's love, then my master, Sri Chaitanya, his fame will be spread everywhere. If these two are delivered, what a glory it would be for Lord Chaitanya. Let us go to them right now. And so that's exactly what he did. He's begging them. You know, he's down on the ground. He's begging them, please accept this holy name. Please accept the mercy of Lord Gauranga. Please chant this holy name. And they were not at all inclined to accept it. And as he continued to beg, finally, was it Jagai or Mudai who picked up the pot? I believe it was Mudai, if I'm correct. And he, you know, imagine a big heavy clay pot. He smashed Lord Nityananda right in the head, and he's bleeding from that wound. Now, what was he thinking when he got hit in the head with that pot? Now he's bleeding. He was saying, oh, this is very good. Because now Sri Chaitanya is sure to come. He always protects his devotees. Now he's going to come right here and he's going to deliver them. But when Sri Chaitanya came, he didn't react that way. He became so angry that his devotee had been attacked. And he manifested this Sudarshan Chakra. He was going to kill them. Killed Mudai right there. And then, again, acting as that original guru, right? That carrying the message, carrying the mood of the Lord in the most merciful way. Nityananda begs Sri Chaitanya. He's holding on to him. He's begging him. No, don't do this. Actually, Jagai, he stopped him. It was going to be much worse, but he held him back. And then when Sri Chaitanya hears this, all of the horrible sins of Jagai didn't mean anything to him anymore. Just the fact that he, in even a small way, did some service for his devotee, for Nityananda, it changed his mood entirely. And he became inspired to deliver Jagai right on the spot, give him Krishna consciousness, give him bhakti. And when Mudai saw this, he began to think, I want that too. You know, please. And now his whole life he's been walking around violent and arrogant. And suddenly he's humble and he's begging. He's saying, please give me that too. I want that bhakti too. Please let me have that. So this becomes the glory of Sri Chaitanya and ultimately becomes the glory of Lord Nityananda. That he's the personification of the principle of guru. That he's mercifully giving Krishna consciousness not only to people who are qualified, not only to people who are refined and special and famous, but to anyone and anyone. And it was Srila Prabhupada that carried that same mood, that he also, that he became, he embodied that principle of guru, that principle of Nityananda. It's said that when we see the principle of guru, we see Nityananda. I know one very nice sadhu. Actually, his name is Sadhu Maharaj. I don't know if any of you have met him before. He lives in Vrindavan. Very nice man. And I was on one of the Radha Gopinath Prikramas of Vrindavan, and I was fortunate to be able to kind of be by his side. And Radhanath Swami had just given a talk, and then Sadhu Maharaj turned to me and said, when I see Radhanath Swami, I see Nityananda. I see Nityananda. Right? Because he sees that same principle is manifesting through him. It's that same principle that has brought us all here today. It's that same principle of Lord Nityananda, that original mood of service to Krishna manifested through another living being that's brought us all here to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. So I feel that I've received some mercy that I'm not qualified to receive to be here. I feel I received that through Srila Radhanath Swami, especially allowing me to come here and inspiring me to come here. And I also feel that working through all of you, that in this community, that principle is so beautifully manifest through all of you. So I thank you again for your entire community, for being such a source of inspiration and mercy. And I will stop here and see if you all have any comments or questions. Prabhu. Yes. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Yes.
After associating with devotees here in ISKCON, I feel that the end of the mission of human life is to be Krishna conscious. Not only for the self, we should also spread this message all over the world and make more and more people Krishna conscious. But question is how to go about it. So first question is that what is the best way to do it? And second question is my proposition that we should make use of the technology. In fact, I feel that TV is a big vice. It is spreading a lot of nuisance in the society.
I'm sorry, what is?
Television. Why don't we use it for this purpose? That is second question. First is that what is the best way to do it? Second is my proposition, why don't we use this television for spreading this message?
I think the best way to do it is the television. At least for you, it seems like you're very inspired by that. But you know, for you, perhaps that is the best way. And this is what I've seen amongst like great souls, is that they can recognize how each individual can best serve. Right? My friend Raghunath is there, wrapped up in the back there, and he became a brahmachari at the same time I became a brahmachari. And he's one of the best people in America at spreading Krishna consciousness. Always has been since that time. But his way was very unusual. It was the way that not most, you know, like nobody ever asked me to do it that way. And that was, he was in a rock band, you know, rock music, you know. So he would travel, and he and his band would travel all over the United States, all the different places in the world. And he would write songs. They didn't sound like your typical bhajans, but they were bhajans. And they were inspiration for so many people to become interested in. So that's how he did it, and very effectively. My way was like kind of more like, I guess you could say, stereotypical of a follower of Srila Prabhupada in one sense, right? That like he gave many instructions, please distribute these books. He may have given a few instructions like please play some rock music. Like there is little examples of that with one traveling troupe festival that they would do. But that's an exception. That was an unusual way, but I served in my way and he served in his way. And we both played our small parts in the mission of Lord Nityananda. So how is it best done? We can look to those who do it best to help us understand how we might be able to best serve. You know, sounds like you have some technological experience, yeah. And so, because your mind is absorbed in that kind of work, then you look where how that's manifesting in this world, and you're seeing it's manifesting in this form of television, and it's being so misused. It could be used so much better. So then it only makes sense that you might take that up. And try to find ways to use your own skills to serve. And if you serve that way, and if I serve my way, and if Raghunath serves his way, and if each individual serves their way, and then one more key ingredient, and then if we're not, and if we can all appreciate what everybody else is doing and do it all together, then they say in English there's a saying that the sum is greater than the that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, right? That like now when it's all done together, then it becomes very powerful. Our weakness is that if we do something even a little bit nicely, we begin to become proud, and then we start to criticize anybody that's doing something different. That's our disease. And so I don't think anyone in the world better shares good, realized instruction on this than Radhana Swami here. How to appreciate everyone's service, and how ultimately the most important thing in our service is that we do it together. Better that we do something together in a mood of community than even we do real dynamic things separate. They'll never manifest in a very dynamic way there. But I see here that things are done so nicely here together. I see so much cooperation amongst how the brahmacharis serve and how the grihasthas serve, and how there's unity through that. How the Radha Gopinath temple serves, and how the Echo Village serves, and how there's unity through that. And that there's unity in the diversity, and that one serves the other, and in this way that both grow together. So there's so many ways, but I wholeheartedly encourage you to follow your inspiration and in your own way try to serve Lord Nityananda. Yes?
Mahamantra is the Mahamantra of Kali Yuga, means Manaha Trayate Iti Mantraha. But we see that we are conditioned by the three modes of material nature. We have a lot of disturbances while chanting. While chanting, like there are many noises coming, like music is going on. There are like so how do we concentrate the mind, and how that chanting will help us to get liberation? That is the main purpose of chanting, like. Yeah. And how will chanting help us to be a nice devotee?
Chanting Mahamantra is a practice. And so the more you practice, the better you can be, but it requires a lot of prayer. This is my understanding. That one, if it's such a precious thing, it's such a powerful thing, that if one's really going to receive it, one really has to beg for it. And so Srila Prabhupada said you have to beg like a child crying for its mother. Right? One has to practice like that. Granted, there's the like when we think of someone meditating, we generally have this picture of someone in a very quiet place, and they're sitting like this, they're chanting their japa, they're deeply absorbed, and it's wonderful if we can do that. We should aspire to do that. We should try to find a suitable setting to do that. And we should try to sit in one place and concentrate. At the same time, I feel so weak at the practice myself that usually when I chant, what I try to do is I just try to make the vibration happen, and I try to feel like I'm being bathed by that vibration. That's how I mostly chant. That I have some prayer in my chanting. Most of my chanting is very distracted, if I'm honest with you. But what I try to do, I live in New York City. It's just like Mumbai. Maybe even worse in terms of distractions. Actually, definitely worse in terms of distractions. When I chant, I just try to think of nothing but just make that sound, let it bathe my ears, let it bathe my body, let it bathe my mind, just make that sound, try to stay in it. And if I can find a little inspiration as I'm doing that to call out to Krishna as well for his mercy, that's how I chant. But I'm not a good example of someone who's a good meditator on that kind of thing. I hang on to chanting desperately, but I'm praying for the mercy of the Vaishnavas. That's my only hope. I know that. Yeah. Another quick question. Where is that? Yourself? Yes.
Yeah. All right. So in Chaitanya Leela, Nityananda came and gave all so much mercy, but in Krishna Leela, Balaram came and he was very militant. So why is it different like that? Is it because of the different age? Like Manu Samhita seems also not relevant in this age, or is it? So I'm just curious about the difference in the mood.
Let me speak on the Lord Balaraman. I don't see him as being militant, although he was, when he came out of Vrindavan, and certainly in Vrindavan, he had a few battles, but more sweet. You know, more his pastimes are sweet as well. He's running through the forest, he's barefoot, he's eating, you know, Yashoda and Rohini sweets, you know, sharing them with his friends, herding the calves, herding the cows, sometimes dancing with the gopis. Predominantly it's sweet. When he comes out of Vrindavan, then just like Krishna, a different type of opulence is manifested there. And then in the same way, when they both come as Chaitanya and Nityananda, then really it's not so much the sweetness that they're manifesting, certainly sweet, but especially what's being manifested is the compassion and the mercy. Is that okay? It's what's needed for this age. You know? Yeah. Roma Harshan. Yeah. Yeah, so when he killed Roma Harshan, he was being merciful to him. You know, because when he can deliver someone like that, so he was teaching a lesson. But he was ultimately, when the Lord does that, it's their mercy. And on top of that, he's like Nityananda. His activities are like very free spirited. You know, so he does something that's unusual and dynamic, almost shocking. But at the same time, everything that the Lord's doing is merciful. But in this age, what's most needed is that mercy, is that compassion, that has to be emphasized more than anything. So when he comes, that's what he's showing. Because it's what Chaitanya is showing as the first servant, he expands that mood as Nityananda.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Yes.
Yeah. My question is a little longer. Kindly bear with me.
Okay.
When you were mentioning quite a couple of times the mind computer, my mind was turning the pages of the book, Consciousness, The Missing Link.
Yes.
Prabhupada's books. So the question is that as a conditioned soul, if Krishna gives up on any living entity.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that, please?
We are all conditioned souls who are trying to perfect our lives. And if Krishna gives up on us, then we become a CBR, like case beyond repair. Nothing can help us. If Krishna gives up on us, then nothing can help us.
Okay.
Now, the living entity has been experiencing from, say, mathematical terms, negative infinity to positive infinity, the larger time frame. He has been experiencing in different species of life, different objects of the senses and different objects and different senses, different set of senses and different object of the senses.
Okay.
Now, when one comes to the human form of life, like 400,000 species of life, which also includes the demigod species, in this species also, whatever objects one experiences through the imperfect senses, it is not actually the real experience of the in the mundane cells itself. The experience which we get from the object of the senses is not real. That's what the modern science says. It's not totally in 100% experience. That's said in the modern science, and some of the books, recent books also mention it. So in such a confused state of mind with the consciousness and artificial intelligence both, how can one decide at some point of time that a personality to whom we surrender as a spiritual master, he is the right person, he will deliver me? What state of mind one has to be in at that point of time to decide it?
Yeah. That was a complicated question, but I'll do my best.
I tried to simplify. I didn't try to complicate.
But if I understand correctly, you're saying in a sense that it's very hard for us to trust our senses, and therefore it's very hard for us to trust our mind. And if that's our condition, how can we even understand who is a guru? Is in a sense, that's what you're asking. It's said that it's commonly said that when the disciple is ready, the guru appears. You've heard this saying before? So the way that I understand that is when one is eager, you know, when one sincerely is eager, when one wants a guru, not, I don't want a guru because it's fashionable. I don't want a guru because I want someone to kind of tell me what I want to hear. You know, I don't want a guru because everybody else has a guru. I don't want a guru because I want to get a Sanskrit name. I don't want a guru because it makes me look spiritual. If I want a guru because I want to give my life to God and I don't want anything else. I'm desperate for that. I really want that. I've had enough of this, just experiencing what the minds and the senses have to offer. I'm sick of it. I really want the truth now. Then when one's in that mood, then Krishna manifests as guru. And then you can understand. That's how I understand it. Sincerity will cut through everything. Yeah. Thank you. And I believe there's a question way in the back. Patiently waiting with his arm in the air like a yogi. I hope I'm going to be able to answer this question because you've been waiting so long.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
Since you are the citizen of US, so I would like to ask you one question.
Yes.
In our country, there are some people who beg in the sing in the street or in the local trains. Such people are called beggars in our country.
When they sing.
Haha.
Okay.
And in US, they are called street artists. So, isn't and they collect the people I heard that people give them $1 to them, and sometimes. Are their services utilized in Sankirtan? Have you come across some instances?
I do it myself. I do it regularly. I try to do it once or twice a week. I sit, either in, when it's cold, I do it inside the subway station, you know, the subway, underground train. And when it's warm, sitting out in the park, we sit down and we chant Maha Mantra. And people do come and they give a dollar or so. So we're fortunate in New York, there's a small group of devotees that are very dedicated. They go out 6 hours every single day without fail. I think they've been doing it for 3 or 4 years. I think 4 years without fail. They've never missed a day, 6 hours every day. And so for me, it's really convenient because it's maybe hard to get a bunch of people together to go out, but I can just like, it's right in the center of the city, and anytime I want, I could just jump right into it. They'd go from 1:30 in the afternoon to 7:30 in the evening every single day. And it's a very powerful way to reach people. It is the mercy of Lord Nityananda, right? Manifesting through the holy name. It's very very much in that mood, just in a sense begging people to accept the name of Krishna. So yeah. Although people do sometimes look on them as beggars, that's a fact. Any other questions or comments? Or shall we end now? Time. Okay, I thank you all so much. It's been a privilege and honor to speak and spend this time with you. I hope that throughout my entire life, Krishna's kind enough to allow me to keep returning to see you all, that we can pass our lives together, serving Lord Krishna, serving Radha Gopinath. Thank you so much.
So let us thank His Grace Kaustubh Prabhu by loudly chanting. Haribo! 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 So now we will have a kirtan, and after that there will be a few more announcements. So I request all of you to kindly stand up and take part in the kirtan.